This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 11th at 10:38 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like we'll all remember what Ohio's tourism slogan is.
What is it again?
Do you know what our current one is?
No.
Find it here. But it's changing to the heart of it all.
The heart of what?
It all.
The country?
Everything? It all.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians. We are coming to you from the heart of it all here in Central Ohio. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Sherrod Brown breaks with President Biden again.
He certainly did. But first, it was a loud day at the Ohio State House on Wednesday as hundreds of protesters filled the gallery and the hallways as the House debated whether to ask voters this summer to make it harder to change the Ohio Constitution. The move is an effort to thwart a possible November vote to guarantee abortion rights in the Constitution.
The State House probably has not seen as feisty a crowd since the Senate Bill 5 debate of 2011 when lawmakers passed the law to neuter public employee unions. Like they did then, advocates yelled and chanted and held signs. Two-thirds of the demonstrators this week at the State House denounced the move, including Mia Lewis.
This is all of Ohio coming out and saying, no on SGR 2, no on SGR 1. Doesn't matter if it's August or November, we're not going to tolerate our rights being taken away.
But Lewis and her fellow demonstrators went away unhappy as the House voted to put the measure requiring a 60% threshold on an August ballot.
The vote was in doubt up until the last minute, but in the end, supporters of the 60% threshold got the 62 House votes they needed, two more than the number required to pass the resolution. State Rep. Brian Stewart denied lawmakers were gaming the system.
They will ask Ohioans, not us, to decide whether all 88 counties should have a voice in determining what amendments make it onto the ballot, and whether to eliminate the cumbersome cure period, which gives initiative petitions effectively a do-over when they fail to meet the requirements for ballot access.
So, Stuart, they're talking about some of the lesser-known provisions of the resolution. Here's where we stand right now. The House and the Senate have both passed this resolution. Governor DeWine plays no role in the amendment process.
As of right now, voters will go to the polls on August 8th. Early voting begins about a month prior. If voters approve, this time by just a simple majority, it would then take a 60% majority to pass future constitutional amendments. Also, petition gatherers would have to collect signatures from all 88 counties. Now they only have to collect signatures from about half, of the state's counties. And if they don't collect enough valid signatures, the 10-day grace period now in place would disappear.
My first reaction is that the supermajority inside the Ohio legislature will stop at nothing to guarantee their power. We can get into the nuance. We can talk about other things, but that's my takeaway here is that they will do nothing. There's nothing they won't do to try to have their way.
Yeah, the strength of the supermajority created by gerrymandered districts has been kind of in doubt since January, when it started with the speaker battle, when Derek Merrin, the choice of the Republican caucus, did not get the speaker chair. There was a break in the Republican caucus, allowed Jason Stevens to cobble together Democrats and Republicans to become speaker. I think there were some observers, myself included, who thought that maybe there were enough Republicans who were skeptical enough about this move, the unpopularity of this move by most of the establishment. We don't know how voters stand yet, but certainly former governors, attorneys general, other folks came out strongly against this. We thought they might waver, but that supermajority, they held together and they got this on the ballot.
It's going to be a loud and probably obnoxious campaign. I mean, the opposing campaign sent out a press release moments after the House vote. Their name of their group is the One Person, One Vote Coalition. And this is, who knows if it will be effective, right? I mean, it comes down to turnout. But as of right now, the anti 60% campaign is ready made. I mean, they're taking your vote away. That's the campaign.
Yes, if that's the simplest message. If they say, like, this is what their spokesman, Dennis Willett, a veteran of Democratic politics in Ohio, said, this amendment is a political ploy designed by special interest in politicians to get voters to give up their rights under false pretenses. He says Ohioans won't fall for it. So that's the message right now. They're taking away your right as a voter to change the Constitution. It's basically allowing for minority rule because you need a supermajority basically to change the Constitution. They're taking away your vote. That's their message. If it drifts towards a proxy vote on the abortion issue, then it gets muddier. If it drifts towards anything else, then it gets muddier. And I think the opponents to the 60% threshold right now, at least, are sticking with taking away your vote as their theme.
Yeah, I'm interested in it also to see where the pro 60% argument goes, because they have been adamant this whole time that it's abortion's not the clear driver of this. They say it's to limit out-of-state special interests. But Brian Stewart, the representative who we just played a cut of, sent a letter to other GOP House caucus members saying this is about abortion, this is about redistricting, this is about protecting all the work we've done there. Ohio Right to Life's press release came out seconds later. Its president, Mike Gonadakis, said, quote, the future of our state's constitution now rests completely in the hands of the people, not the political class. Again, this is Ohio Right to Life, the state's largest anti-abortion activist group, trying to make this about the Constitution and not trying to make this about abortion.
The press release does not mention protecting Ohio's current anti-abortion laws or abortion restrictions. It's all about the Constitution. I love, he says, this now rests in the hands of the people, not the political class. If 3/5 of the House and the Senate and the governor is not the political class, the folks who have put this on the ballot, I don't know who is the political class.
Yes, them putting this going to the ballot is purely
the current
actions.
Political class
exactly
has put it
right.
on the ballot.
Right.
Now,
yes,
former governors have come out against it. You know, it'll be an interesting campaign. You know, the reasons for this have changed. At first, it was we want to protect the Constitution from out-of-state special interests. And then they had to sort of back away from that because they got $1 million from a businessman from Illinois, out-of-state
special interests. A Republican billionaire donor.
Yeah, from the U-Line company, the packing company. So now then it was to protect protect us from fraudulent folks like Larry Householder, corrupt folks like Larry Householder.
Right.
So basically they want to say they want to protect the Constitution from monopolies like casinos and marijuana folks. That probably is their strongest argument, but they've changed their argument so many times, I'm not sure it holds.
It seems like a solution in search of a problem. There is not a lot of people from out of state changing the Ohio Constitution. I mean, it's a solution in search of a problem is what the data seem to say to me. Yeah.
It's very simple. I don't think no one's kidding anyone. This is about the abortion issue, which could be on the ballot in November. It's not a guarantee. They have until July to collect the signatures. They have to collect a lot of signatures from half of Ohio's counties. It's not an easy thing. So we don't even know if it's going to be on the ballot. But this is purely designed to thwart that.
Right.
But it also will make future changes to the Constitution harder, not just this one. So when they want to pass a borrowing package, that's going to need 60% of the vote if this passes. Any other restrictions or any kind of constitutional amendment will require that 60%. Some Republicans will want, some conservatives will want, for instance, putting in the Constitution banning vaccine mandates, which is there's an effort
right
out there. That's going to now take 60%. It's going to be harder to do.
It's going to be all about turnout. The August part is the real wild card here because we don't know what's going to happen. When was the last time there was a major issue on an August election? I mean,
no, you can look at Senate Bill 5 because that passed in the spring of 2011, similar to now, and it was on the November ballot in 2011, which is not a traditional election. It's usually a municipal election, odd number of years as mm-hmm. years, city and county elections. That had a huge turnout. Given for an odd number year, this could be similar. But that was November. August is vacation time.
Right.
People, I mean, we're paying close attention to this. I'm not sure the average Ohioan is paying close attention to this. It's all going to come down to grassroots organizing and which side can get their folks out.
And we haven't even touched on the fact that there could be legal challenges to this. I mean, this comes months after August elections were eliminated. It's still a bit of a legal gray area. August elections are largely illegal, and the legislature, again, has not reversed that law or allocated money for the Constitution. And supporters of the resolution say the resolution allows for an August election, but Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters of Ohio insists that it's illegal, that they could not create an August election with a resolution and not a piece of legislation. So this is still very gray.
Yeah, it'll go. I'm not sure they're going to file suit, because the chances of that suit succeeding with the conservative Ohio Supreme Court are probably pretty slim. They may just want to put their efforts into the campaign and trying to defeat it at the polls and getting their vote out. It will be. It all comes, as you said, it all comes down to organization and turnout. The Right to Life group, the church groups, the rural voters who are strongly opposed to abortion rights, do they come out in droves in the middle of summer? Likewise, do folks who support abortion rights and oppose this move in the Constitution, do they interrupt their summer vacations to go either vote early or come out on August 8th? It will be really interesting.
Another interesting aspect of this is the Ohio House Speaker, Jason Stevens. He ended up voting for this. He was a roadblock.
He said he had no interest in this.
Not long, like, a month ago?
Yeah, six weeks ago or so. Yeah.
And he voted for it. What happened?
Yeah, that pressure campaign had to have worked. You saw those ads, and he eventually, Republicans fall in line. Jason Stevens fell in line with his majority. Now, Democrats say they are disappointed in him. Was this part of the deal that they had with him?
Right. They Democrats
to make
backed
him speaker?
Democrats backed Stevens, and that was the main factor in helping him beat Derek yep. Marin, a much more conservative Republican. That was the main factor in helping Stevens win the speaker's gavel.
We don't know if he promised Democrats that he would try to stop this August election and the 60% threshold change. We don't know that. If he did promise them that and went back on it, what do Democrats do? Do they say, hey, Derek Marin, we want you to be our speaker now? No, they're not going to do that. I think the Democrats, again, they're in a no-win situation. They took what they could get back in January, and now they're stuck with it. They're still in a very small minority.
Yeah, they can't do much without building sort of survivor-like alliances and just like hoping to throw gasoline on the Republican infighting fires.
On the other hand, Jason Stevens likely has built up a lot of goodwill among the conservatives who didn't want him to be speaker, because he voted with them on this issue and allowed it to come to the floor and voted with them and allowed it to go to the voters in August. So that certainly has to help his standing with the conservative base of the Republican Party.
Yeah, he also, I mean, to put yourself in those shoes, the conservative activist, he could have done this 2 months ago. This could have been on the May primary.
Yes.
The Last Ride, a deep dive into a shocking unsolved mystery.
These two young men disappear off the face of the earth, and the last person to see them live was this sheriff's deputy. His stories were so unbelievable.
Listen to the Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR network.
Turning now to our Snollygoster of the Week segment, that is where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week it goes to a very decorated Ohio politician, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown.
Brown, as you know, is running for re-election. The Democrat faces a tough race in a state that is pretty Republican. Ohio and national Republicans have been aiming at his seat for several years now.
Yeah, Brown, lacking a primary opponent at this point, is tacking to the middle. Earlier this month, he broke with the Biden administration and voted to rescind the president's actions to delay new tariffs on solar imports from China and other Asian countries.
And this week, he's co-sponsored a bill that would extend for 2 years that Title 42, that's the COVID emergency policy that restricts migrants from entering the United States. That, too, runs contrary to Biden administration policy. Brown says border policies under Presidents Biden, Trump, Obama, Clinton, and George W. Bush have failed us.
Brown also called for more mental health professionals, inspectors, and military at the border. He's always been a protectionist on trade. Now he's for a stronger border. So stances he no doubt will have highlighted in his campaign election.
Yes, he will.
In his campaign.
So for that shrewd advance planning, Sherrod Brown gets our Snollygoster of the Week award.
That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcast. And please just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.